Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet. Every year, millions of tons of waste threaten our environment. But Marco Prayer, CTO and co-founder of Recycle Smart, is leading a transformative journey. With over 15 years of software development experience, Marco infuses his leadership with a passion for sustainability. Recycle Smart has redefined recycling nationwide using cutting-edge technology under Marco's guidance to streamline waste management and propel Australia towards a circular economy. Marco shares his insights on waste management challenges, technological advancements driving Recycle Smart's mission, and his vision for a greener, more sustainable future. We also dive into further challenges like how to change habits of consumers and get them to actually wanting to recycle, the business model for B2G, which is business to government, B2C, and B2B, and this really interesting end-of-life data stream that they get from recycling. It takes time and dedication to build a business in this space, but be prepared to be inspired by the story of Recycle Smart and Marco's dedication to revolutionizing recycling practices.
Sustainability is a tough environment, but you don't have to give up. Starting from like your user base, and you have to be willing to understand and go after that and discover who they are and how to attract them. There are people that like they are willing to listen and try to change the status quo throughout like noble actions with their focus on sustainability, on climate. It just takes like an enormous amount of time. Again, it's something that like we cherish ourselves and are never giving up. But there is a space where even entrepreneurs can be effective. You have to get like the famous lean startup book and throw it like in the bin. You're not going to do something like in 6 months. Changing behaviors is something that it's beyond the understanding of what you can get like from an MBA. It's really something that like it has to become sort of like your life mission in a sense.
Welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. Lots to discuss, Marco. I'm really excited to talk about Recycle Smart. You know, you have spent a lot of your professional life working on this mission and business. And so I just wanted to get started with standing background. You know, we often talk to founders and entrepreneurs and some people, they kind of know it at a young age. They go to school for maybe environmental studies or sustainability and they are in that. But what's your origin story and was it connected to climate? And how did you make that connection?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the podcast. And to be honest, like, no, like we are, both Giorgio and I, we come from a very different sort of a background in a sense. We were like younger part of like of our 30s. And we sort of like were looking for a problem to solve, literally. And Giorgio at the time just finished his MBA and he had this idea that he wanted to promote like a reward system for recycling. Let's say like he was dreaming of having a solution that could, instead of penalizing, sort of elevate good behavior, like when talking about recycling. And myself, like I was literally not, to be honest. I was doing work for different startups at the time, and I was definitely passionate about sustainability, but I was not like super into like the waste space at the time. Then I met Giorgio, and he convinced me that it was a time like for us, now 13 years ago, it was the right time to spend some energies into this problem. He had commercial skills, salesman skills, and I had the technical ones. And so we kind of started like that. So like we don't really have like a strong connection with the field like since the beginning. I don't know, like, I mean, I can't really tell like if it's pro or cons, like not having like a background. I think that what was determining for us was having different kind of experiences already, like because we were both foreigners and we're building this business like in Australia and we both come from Europe where the recycling system is definitely differently structured. And the opportunity were absolutely clear. Like Australia, it's behind. There's no really other ways to put it compared to other countries. But also Australia is like definitely a land of opportunities. So we thought, okay, maybe we can do something about it. And so that's how we started.
And because you've been doing this for so many years too, and if you think about, you know, recycling, sustainability, the space is still quite such a young space. So although maybe you weren't at it before, your time being in this space now means that you do have a lot of experience in this space and what you're creating. And so when you looked at Australia, what's the big problem with recycling? Because I'm based in Canada, you know, we have our recycling, we have a blue bin, you know, we're told to put all recycling items and then it goes off and you hope 100% of it gets recycled. And I think the figure is that we hear sometimes is, you know, 8 or 9% of that gets recycled. A lot of stuff cannot be recycled. What's the overarching problem with recycling and household recycling?
So the problem with recycling is contamination. If we want to tend towards an hypothetical world where everything gets recycled, we need to imagine ways so that we can build an infrastructure that is going to enable to sort things efficiently in such a way that every single stream coming from different stream, let's imagine before, like we can sort like every single item like singularly, doesn't get contaminated. And so that is literally like the main problem to solve in Australia, definitely, but anywhere else in the world. Australia, compared to other like countries, they have multiple bins, multiple streams. Australia still like fixated on 2, maximum 3. I don't know the situation in Canada, but of course, like if you have just 2 or 3 big pool of receivers, people has the tendency putting like anything. There is the single responsibility is a big deal. And so just to connect to what I was telling you before, so 13 years ago, we decided that our first company, because we create one and then we failed and then we created the second one, our first company, which goes by the same name, RecycleSmart, had the ambitious idea of inspecting like 25% of the top of people's bins. In Australia, there's a lot of like dwellings, a lot of like households. So it was something that like we thought was doable. So literally, physically inspecting people's bins. And from that like analysis, being able to determine if the user was a good recycler and therefore giving them like a reward, or like if it was a bad recycler. And in that case, give them like an education. So if you were finding something that was not supposed to be like in the bin, we would have sent an email to the user explaining why, like for that month, he was not going to receive like his own reward. And this, I mean, just to connect also to what you're saying, was almost 15 years ago, where sustainability was definitely something that was not as strong as it is today. Just 10 years, things have changed dramatically. But at the time, because it was a convincing sort of a proposition, we convinced like different councils to start a trial with us. And we started 3. And they were actually successful trials. So like we inspect like 50,000 households. We built like some technology in order to do the tracking. And little we know that because the problem of sustainability probably was not as strong as it is today, even though we were actually able to prove that the contamination rates, which again were like the ultimate goal of our sort of journey, right, were actually improving, the business couldn't work. It couldn't lift off because it was extremely expensive. You can imagine having people going around, literally walking and inspecting people's bins, how much it would have cost. And it was not a viable solution, unfortunately. Like it sounds, it's very startup-ish. It's very fascinating. People would say that it's also very stupid, but we never had problems with those kind of like sort of suggestion, because then we kept doing like silly things till today. And this is the first iteration. And again, the objective was tackling contamination throughout like a reward system. Okay, like you can imagine the council gives some support for like for RecycleSmart. RecycleSmart runs its operation. It pays on sort of like inspectors in that case they were. It buys these little rewards and it runs the business, and so everyone wins. So like if you are a good recycler as a resident, you get something back. The council improve the contamination rate and theory they spend less, and RecycleSmart has a viable business. Again, that didn't work. The time was not right. Contamination, even though there was like getting improved, was not enough an improvement, and so we had to close down. But that, as you were saying before, like it was an unbelievable experience and was putting like the foundation for what then like we did like and started to do like in 2019, where we picked up again the idea and we kind of shifted gears. So in 2019, then we got approached by Antler, which is a venture capital pre-seed, and they contacted us like singularly because we had like two interesting, I guess, profiles. Giorgio went in immediately. I was working for another company at the time, and I was not in a rush of doing something like that. But like in the classic Giorgio style, Giorgio is definitely a salesman, someone that really knows how to push. He started like this journey with this accelerator, and it was like, I mean, I'm picking up like our old ideas. So if you're coming now, we're doing it together. Otherwise, I'm gonna look for a different co-founder. So I had to drop my ball and join him in this journey. Little did we know that like we would have come as far as we did. When we joined Antler, we collect all our knowledge from our 10 years of experience, right? And what was the main differentiator? The main differentiator was that instead of delivering education, which unfortunately you can't build like a big business, like almost like any business around it, like, yeah, you can do something, but definitely not like with something that has the ambition of unfortunately be very effective in a shorter time frame. So instead of like focusing only on education, Giorgio had this crazy idea. I said, like, why don't we start to pick up like things directly from people's houses? And we're going to sort them for them. We're going to sort like these items that they don't know what to do with. And we're going to get paid for that. Like, we know that there is people that like want to do better. And we start from that. We have the industry call it sometimes like here in Australia, like the gray bin, which is anything that is not supposed to be in the red bin, which is for us like a general waste one. So there is a gazillion of items that they have like a solution. They can be recycled better, but we just need to find a way to not get the user to put them like in the general waste. And so we did. We graduated from the accelerator literally like with my holiday van going in around like in Sydney and picking up like stuff from people's houses. And Giorgio with his very Italian Vespa. And that's how we literally started. So the experience led us to this point, still with the same conviction, still with the same sort of background idea. And now we have a team of 20 people. We are Australia-wide. We have more than 80 drivers in a business that, again, based on the same principles that the one that I just told you, right? Like, it aims to create an infrastructure that can tackle the problem of getting all these resources out of people's houses or out of the businesses, because, again, now we're working with a lot of other verticals. So we're working with the government, working with the consumers, and as well as with businesses. Wants to get all these items out, sort them. Again, it's a convenience play. It wants to become something that like users can use it like as simply as possible. It has to be extremely simple, of course. And we sort everything that we get, and then we distribute it to the right, either recycler or the like owner of the item that we have collected. So now this infrastructure wants to expand as much as possible. And it's built in such a way that like, if at any point in time, a new item company, whatever it is, like it finds a new way to manage a product that is putting on the market, which is not necessarily throughout like single use principles, right? So that it goes under the ground, but like it has a way of being reused, or like there is a way to recycle them like properly, or like return it. The platform is there. Like, so we want a one-stop shop where you can deliver all these things and being sure that like the best outcome for them is what we can deliver to you.
You're right. In my example in Canada, we have our glass that goes in one container, we have our paper that goes in the other, and then we just have our miscellaneous plastics that go in another. And I think glass probably is pretty easily recyclable. Paper is pretty easy recyclable. We know that pop cans and aluminum and those things have a dollar figure, so those tend to be easy to recycle or drop off and do that. But then I also know that when you get a package to your house and it has some sort of foamy plastic recyclable material, I grab it and I keep storing it, and over a period of time, eventually I'll have to go to our recycler and drop that off by hand. Or if I have an old computer, I'll put that aside and say, oh, nobody can use this anymore. Then how do I recycle it? So I guess that's my question would just be, how do you then build this market and change for consumers? Or is the draw and the benefit easy so that, you know, I don't have to go and do my trips to do all this? And like, how did you get those first customers on board and change a habit?
Absolutely. And that's why sustainability is extremely hard, is atrociously hard, because there's no incentive schemes. And changing a habit without incentives is extremely, extremely hard. We know for a fact that like a newer generations are much more sensitive to the problem, but yeah, good luck in trying to change a habit without an incentive. So the way that like we started is through the connection that we built like originally with councils. We engaged with a couple of those. We pitched this idea. And as we did like in the first iteration, we started a trial. The council are motivated to tackle the problem from a different angle, not only because it's innovative, government and startups don't really go well together, but there are some councils that are a little bit more progressive and they are fully aware of like the kind of problematics that the residents have. And again, the front-facing issue is that there is a huge amount of things that they have like a potential that goes in the red bin. There is an educational problem, but like if the educational problem can be tackled immediately, maybe if we were to offer another service where people can very conveniently give away all these items so they avoid going to the general waste, me as a council, I am going to end up like spending less because of the landfill. I mean, it has a cost putting stuff under the ground. And my retention in terms of like, because council don't talk about retention, but like we're going to have like a much like friendlier and a happier user base. And so was it. So we find like a few councils that were like interested to pay initially for our service, and we deliver like this convenience piece to the residents. And again, like the attractive sort of a point for the residents is the convenience. As of today, you as a resident, you have to manage all those operations by yourself. You have to store those items, you have to remember of them. Every now and then you have to go to the recycling pit. Maybe like there is some items that don't get accepted to the recycling like station, right? Like because the recycling maybe is it's just like a public drop-off and they just take certain items. Maybe you have styrofoam or polystyrene which are not managed and you just bought like a new TV. Can you imagine like how this one can accumulate like as a problem? As a normal person, rather, you don't necessarily want to invest, you might want to, but you don't necessarily want to invest your weekends, drop off like trips to the recycling pit. It's not necessarily what like something that you want to do. And number like at hand, we also know that like the recycling centers in Australia called CRC, community recycling centers, are very much underutilized. Efforts built from the EPA and they're underutilized. It's very efficient in a sense. Again, public drop-offs are put up like by the council, but it can't even, it's not even been, it's, it hasn't been designed to absorb like 100% of the people of the council. It would not be able to absorb it because there is, if you go there like every single day, there is a line of people and they're waiting in their car. It's also like inefficient from that point of view. So there's a lot of different angles where you can see sort of like this solution and is a convenience play. People have to find it, something like our service extremely easy to do. They don't have to think about like that much. And hopefully in the future, that's what we're moving towards, there will be also a reward. Whatever like this reward is an interesting topic. But yeah, the objective is to reward the user in some shape or form so that they are doing the right thing. Again, a convenience, so you don't have to go around and invest your time to do that much. Very simple, extremely simple, and hopefully that is going to give you something back at the end.
I've read that your solution can be chalked up to kind of the Uber of recycling, and it's obviously worked. You've picked up over 115,000, and that number is probably more than the number that I saw when I read it, but you've done a ton of pickups, and you have used technology to enable that ease of use for consumers, and it's obviously been working. But when we think about the business model, you mentioned a couple of things, and you obviously have a consumer, so this is, there's a convenience, and so they can purchase to have a recycling bag, and you know they can order it just like an Uber, and you can pick up the recycling, and they know that the bed that they bought that ends up having two garbage bags full of styrofoam, the styrofoam is now taken care of, and it can be recycled properly. But then you said something about the council that's interesting, is that dumps are being overutilized, and I know in most cities, in most places, dumps are getting to this point where they don't know what to do with all of our trash every day because they just are getting piled and piled, and there's not much room for this. So is the business model counselors because they're happy that this is getting taken away from the dumps? Is it consumers or is it kind of a mix of both? And how does that business model work for you?
It's literally like we're tackling all these verticals like at the same time. And the reason why is that it's a difficult space and we can't like let go of any these opportunities in a sense. On the B2G side, we are engaging with councils, some councils subsidizing our product to the residents. And not only that, we are also helping councils themselves, logistic and operational enhancements. Again, I want to stress out the point that like what we're building is an infrastructure. So the objective of this infrastructure is to be extremely flexible and potentially like irrespectively of who we're dealing with, being able to solve a problem. And what is the problem? The problem is just collecting and sorting and redistributing. So if the council wants to engage with us, we're very happy to do that. Not only that, as I was mentioning before, if the council has a recycling center and they don't know or they are interested to add certain items that they want to collect to their capability of that specific like recycling center, we can help them as well. Because again, we can set up like a station within those precincts and then take care of the logistics. On the business side, because again, I was telling you before, on the B2B side, we do exactly the same. So we're dealing like with business themselves. Some of them are smaller offices, some others have a bit more like a bigger operations. And quite often it happens that these businesses have decent volumes of items they don't really know what to do with, and unfortunately goes under the ground. The most common is soft plastics, which is a well-known problem in the industry. And then there are consumers. Again, with consumers, it's exactly the same thing. Consumers, of course, are a bit more reluctant to pay out of their pocket because they're already paying like the waste fee to the council themselves. So right now, if this council is not subsidizing, like you are meant to, as a resident, to pay yourself, get your own bags picked up and recycled by RecycleSmart. But there's definitely a lot of interest in that sense. And so that's we are working with all these different verticals, and every different verticals has a different sort of a motivator. I think, and we think that like the most exciting one for different reasons, right? Like, because the B2G, again, government, like extremely like wealthy, very sticky clients, but unfortunately very slow moving. So it's not like an environment for startups. We have good context and we're moving exceptionally well like throughout those boundaries. But there's a reason why we had to go crowdfunding, because venture capitals don't really want to even see any startup working with the government. They don't want to even hear it. And so the B2C is a very interesting one, but like until we have developed like a very strong incentive scheme, I am personally convinced that like the growth of that, say, vertical, it's not going to be as strong as we wish it could be. And so the most exciting one, I think, is going to be for the next definitely 12 or 24 months, the B2B one. The B2B one has a huge potential because we are dealing with a lot of brands. We're talking with them like of corporate responsibility. So it's something that we kind of a name to say that they're not just engaging with us. First of all, for brands talking that are working with us, it's extremely valuable for them. Just talking and just literally like having a normal partnerships. On top of that, there's the opportunity to creating like a really like an infrastructure with a lot of businesses directly with them. So we don't only also collect items from businesses, but we have the opportunity to be exposed directly to their users. And a very simple way to imagine that is coffee capsules. So I don't know if you use coffee capsule for like your coffee, but like there's a lot of people that use the coffee capsules, right? Coffee capsules are recyclables. And usually there's a lot of brands, for example, Nespresso, that like has different programs to tackle the coffee capsule. And you have to bring them back to the Nespresso shops. Nice, but how inconvenient again. And so it doesn't take much to imagine like a world where like if there is a platform that can ingest all these different items from all these different brands. And because we are sorting them already, because we want to recycle them like in the best possible way, again, we want to sort them. They have to be segregated in their own stream. It's not impossible to imagine what can we do to bring back the customer, right, directly to the brand itself. At that point, I'm picking up, and I know because my driver is doing the scanning operation on the spot, I know that like you, Marco, have been using coffee capsules. So without exposing you to Nespresso, I might like eventually going to offer you a 10% discount on your purchase because I saw that you have that. You might want it, you might not need it, doesn't really matter. But like you see that there is like a very strong incentive that it's a marketing tool for the brand in order to enhance their retention and get like their users back in the landscape of an end of life cycle of their own product that right now doesn't exist. This is a billion-dollar idea for real. And we're not very far from this. I'm pretty sure that like someone would do something like this. And again, the focal point is to build infrastructure first. If you go right now in any venture capital pitch, like any Shark Tank, you would see that like I'm almost 100%. Everyone wants to be sustainable, but nobody really has an idea of how to be sustainable with, especially if they're putting like a product in the system, right? They are all very scattered. Everyone thinks that they have a solution, but they don't really know how to build it. There has to be one solution. There has to be easy, right? And once the things like are going through the system, this infrastructure has to be able to repurpose, of course, the item to potentially the original owner to recycle it in the right way. And throughout this operation, I can also reward the user. And that's some beautiful and super powerful marketing tool that like brands are already putting their eyes on. So that's why we are very excited.
Yeah, that's super interesting because you're right. The most of the data capture and most of that kind of information is happening at the time of purchase, but lot less on the time of end of life of that product, capturing that information and that data at the end of life and what happens with it. But then the connecting that to the customer is a really interesting idea because it opens up a whole new data awareness and understanding on how that's actually being used as well from a sustainability standpoint.
And the data point is huge. Again, like we haven't talked about it, but of course, like you can imagine in the scope 3 ideal, again, world, right, where we can really track something like this, it's absolutely essential. We're not going to be able to reach, again, scope 3 without knowing how things transitioning from the user all the way down to the recycler. And having an aggregator and someone that sorts them and that can report is exactly like the missing link from having something in people's houses and the end point where it's the recycler itself.
I wanted to take a second to tell you about our season 2 sponsor, Springwise. Springwise is the global ESG innovation platform that offers its readers early access to the ideas transforming our world. I actually started using Springwise probably 10 years ago to review innovative startup ideas, and I've been a fan ever since. There are 3 new stories on the site every weekday featuring solutions to some of the biggest challenges we face as a global community. You'll find innovations in climate tech, renewable energy, plastic alternatives, the circular economy, and how we can live a more sustainable life. The stories are sourced and written by the Springwise team of journalists and will give you an inspiring take on what's right around the corner, whether you read it to inform your work or simply for a regular dose of optimism. Springwise sets the innovation agenda. The newsletter is free to access, and to sign up, visit springwise.com/newsletter-signup. Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and a review. Yeah, and you're picking up and you're sorting and then you're bringing it to the recycler. Is there any value in that from the material that you are bringing to be recycled? Or is that just has to be such a volume play that that's not a business model that works in this type of recycling scenario?
No, long story short, not today, unfortunately. And that's the reason why it's an industry that is not very attractive. The only stream that has value, but I'm sure that like our listeners have an idea of it anyways, is just the electronic waste. That's the only one that has a little bit of value. By itself, it almost offsets the cost that like our company is incurring in order to deal with all the other recyclers, because of course, behind our price, we are sort of like hiding all the other operational costs that involves to deal with all the other recyclers that actually have a price on their operations themselves, right? And we're paying for all of those. So because again, there is the e-waste sort of value is quite high, we almost offset the cost of all the others. We are very hopeful that, and we see that, at least in Australia, again, which is like a young market, we see that for the medium high volume sort of items, it's really just a matter of competition. So as long as, or as soon as another player enters the market, the player, because recycling facilities are so expensive to be built, yeah, they get built through grant, but there's so much incentives to get get them like utilized as much as possible, at least on paper again. Competition from different sort of recyclers is the only thing that you need in order to have like a market that is kind of healthy. Because there is so, again, so much intention to utilize the facilities that have been built, they want to get like their hands on anything that can be recycled throughout the facility. Because otherwise it would be such a huge loss for them that they don't want to really even think about again. So it's a competitive environment also for items and streams that can be recycled. I don't know if it makes sense what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very difficult because of the fact that the cost of infrastructure to build, they need to utilize that space. But the volume of that materials, there's no kind of business model there until there's incentives. And I guess that's where, like, until there's actual incentives and all those different pieces of recycling, there's not as strong of a business model to pick up and then sell that to a recycler. They're taking that and processing that and using that.
It's also like, I mean, at least like in this part of the world, for example, we have the same thing, like 10 cents for aluminum cans and different kind of bottles. Those are unfortunately are taxes that like big corporations are paying. So there's that pool of money that like return money. It's not yet stimulated from by a very healthy recycling system that is actually functioning. It's more like the government like putting an extremely like expensive tax on producers, and that is going to sort of disincentivizing like the recycling sort of operation behind it. So even in that sense, again, you're completely right. It's an incentive scheme, at least for the consumer. The focal point is, of course, getting something out of it, out of like the recycling that gets picked up and after that reused. But again, even in that scenario, like what it's usually missing is a convenience infrastructure that I can facilitate from anywhere all the way down to the recycler. And yeah, the 10 cents is a beautiful way to see that one. It's an interim way, but again, like it's just like one stream. It has its own like incentive scheme. We need to imagine something that probably at the consumer is a little bit more efficient, is a little bit more convenient, and can be sort of seen from only one lens. Well, again, like I was saying, like a one-stop shop. And this is not because, I mean, people might think that like this is not necessarily a super sustainable behavior, that we should want to have the time and willingness to sort all our items and invest like as much time to take care of all the things that we get like in our place. And yes, that's a beautiful proposition, which unfortunately in the last 10 years we've seen being respected only by the super green, solely by people that really, really, really cares. And we're talking about less than 0.5% of the population, at least like in Australia. And so if you really want to act like on the remaining 90 plus, something that has to be put in place.
Well, Marco, as we wrap up, you've obviously built an incredible business in the circularity and in a market where you've had to educate consumers to use your services as counselors and government as well, and now B2B. And it's exciting to hear about how you might be able to institute something really, really huge in that end of life cycle. And doing that in a sustainable way and also helping companies at the same time. You know, you've dedicated, I think, you know, a large part of your professional life to this mission. And you know, what would you say to somebody that is thinking about getting into, you know, sustainability or environmental startup? And what advice would that be?
Fantastic question. Like, funny enough, like I was on the panel of an investor firm a couple of weeks ago where I was asked to talk about like the VC sort of world, like in the space of sustainability, right? And unfortunately, our experience is inspiring because it's like a labor of love. It really talks about the resilience and the love that people have to be game changers, to be really like promoters of change. And I was telling you at the beginning, like I was not born with specifically passion for this field. Like in the years, we're striving to solve difficult issues. And that's why we've never given up, because we believe that there's, first of all, that something needs to change. Secondly, is that's just not through education only, but unfortunately, we need to act on it. And third, that like we really need to stick to the problems. My advice would be exactly to that. Like, sustainability, unless you're inventing something fantastic, some piece of machinery that like is going to revolutionize revolutionize the world, which would be fantastic by itself. Otherwise, sustainability is a tough environment, but you don't have to give up. Starting from like your user base, and you have to be willing to understand and go after that and discover who they are and how to attract them. There are people that like they are willing to listen and try to change the status quo throughout like noble actions with their focus on, again, on sustainability, on climate. It just takes like an enormous amount of time. Again, it's something that like we cherish ourselves and I've never given up. But there is a space where even entrepreneurs can be effective. You have to get like the famous lean startup book and throw it like in the bin. You're not going to do something like in 6 months. Changing behaviors is something that it's beyond the understanding of what you can get like from an MBA. It's really something that like it has to become sort of like your life mission in a sense. But things can change. And I think like regardless of we're going to be successful in the end or like someone else will, things are going to change. And it's just a matter of like believing that you can be the one that is going to make it and stick to that.
Marco, thanks so much for joining us. How can people learn a little bit more about Recycle Smart?
You can go on recyclesmart.com. You can follow me like on LinkedIn, Marco on Prayer. There's only myself like in the world, if I remember correctly, at least like on LinkedIn. And so write like an email to hello@recyclesmart.com. I will be happy to get in contact with anyone that has good ideas and like, willing to participate and help us in the mission.
Thank you again, Marco.
Thank you so much, Marco.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. Well, Marco, thank you for joining me again, but just had a question around the circular economy and what that means. But what does that mean as a good business economy as well? Because, you know, that's the one thing that I see as well is that we see this waste streams kind of going around and the inefficiencies, and you've been able to figure out a model that allows you to turn that waste stream into a circular stream and do it efficiently.
So the circular economy has, of course, some difficulties right now as to lift off like from something that is just like a buzzword. Like it has to become, before than anything, like a more powerful than what it is now, marketing tool for businesses in such a way that like not greenwashing again, but it has to become something that businesses strongly recognizes that like they are getting valid returns from approaching like a basic circular economy sort of a principle. And that can be done only again throughout like building an infrastructure that facilitates them. Like there's no chance. It's going to be extremely hard to convert people for like businesses in a sense, right, from single use towards like more circular like behaviors if there's not at least like a strong push from the users, right? And then it has to be starting like with the businesses willing to bite the bullet and promoting themselves and starting to place these certain behaviors in action. Then of course we want to transition them to a much more circular sort of behavior, which the single use and the circular can't coexist because there's no chance operationally we can have both at the same time. And so once the business are going to be seeing that there is, of course, a much, much more like higher retention, the users are going to be like much more willing to become stickier, they will see that like the circular like has a lot of value. And in that sense, again, like we really hope that is going to be like a push like very soon.
Thanks so much for tuning into the episode of Someone Like You. We hope you found our discussions today really insightful. Next week, we'll dive into another entrepreneur founder building a business in climate, so stay tuned. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. It really, really helps us out. Follow us on LinkedIn, where we also post really great videos from this episode. Thanks again for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode.